So hello and welcome to another edition of our teleseminar series. And of course, this is Ali Alberigo, and I'm honored to be with you here today. For those of you who are listening in on this at a later date, congratulations on taking the time to improve yourself and continually be in search of Shibumi. Shibumi is a Japanese word which basically translates to perfection or the constant pursuit of perfection. Today's topic is managing the stress of running a professional school or a professional business. Often while running a martial arts school, it seems like a dream. You get to do what you want and make a living. Seldom does anyone mention to you the stressful things that can go along with running a business. Let me first paint the picture of a few scenarios as why many martial arts schools open up. But let me use myself as an example. When I first started teaching, I was only 15 years old. My teacher who ran the school started me off with warm-ups and eventually stretching, and then I ended up teaching a full class. I earned the honor and privilege of getting my own keys to the school. One day I got the call. The instructor said, "I can't make it today. Can you do the class for me?" And of course I agreed with the highest of motivation and honor. One day turned into two, and the rest is history. I ended up teaching, running, and taking over the school. I was 16 years old, and I had my first school. At that time, I was heavily involved in the music industry, performing in a rock and roll band, traveling the country, and too much of that was in the way of my martial art business, so I decided to shut the school down to pursue that music career, and I got back to my studies as a student in the martial arts as well. Later on in life, I decided that I had more control over my destiny, and I opened up another school that was, and that was about 10 years later. When I opened my school, I thought it would be only a hobby, and then I got the bug, and I sold my other business, which is a landscape construction company, to pursue my martial art career full-time as a school owner. Now, some 18 years later, I have 4 locations in Long Island, 1 in Bermuda, and I've had many others around the globe. I've bought millions in real estate and traveled the world teaching, and I became a public speaker in the martial art industry due to Member Solutions, and special thanks to Jeff Cohen. Why am I telling you this? I guess I can say this is to gain credibility, but most importantly, it's to give you some idea of what I go through on a regular basis. I have a new philosophy. The philosophy is low stress, high quality, and high profit. In these trying times, and don't let anyone tell you that they're not trying times, that you must be a well-oiled machine. Without telling you about all the political issues, financial stress, or unemployment statistics, I'm sure you're feeling some sort of crunch in your business. And if you're not, it's a great thing, but I would say it's highly unrealistic because even the best of business people, even the most affluent businesses, are still feeling somewhat of what's going on in our society. And this is not to say that your business has to be affected entirely. All I'm saying is this is a time when you really truly have to be on the top of your game. So first let's go into a few of the different topics that I had talked about, and the first one was dealing with difficult clients. In regards to running a martial arts school, when my friends and I get together, we get lunch on a regular basis, and we laugh till we're blue in the face with silly stories about the kids in class, like the one that I had who kind of had an accident in his pants. He didn't want to admit to it, and he actually was doing cartwheels and spewing little presents all over the school. A buddy of mine talked about his situation where he told us this over lunch where he had a sleepover in his school, and obviously this one child had too much pizza, and in his sleep he threw up. As if that would have been enough, he threw up on the kid who he's sleeping next to, and that was a pretty gross situation. My friend tried to wake this kid up, but one thing led to another, and one awoke, and then the other one started screaming. All of a sudden, it was a major throw-up fest in the school. But we get together on a regular basis, and we laugh till we cry at times. We talk about the people that we extend our time to, our energy and our effort to, spending inordinate amounts of time helping little Johnny because he's hitting his little sister or talking back to his mother, only to find out weeks later that they're quitting the school without as much as a courtesy phone call. The reason we get together as friends sometimes just turns into nothing more than a glorified counseling session for us. Well, for every scenario I give you, I'm sure you can give me 5 of your own. It's so similar, I'm sure we can just write them down and label them as scenario A, B, C, and D. When I start to tell you a story, you could say scenario A, and you would know exactly what we were talking about. In fact, in my school, during our staff meetings, rather than waste time, sometimes we just say we had a situation and it's scenario A. We know how it goes, what the conversation is, what the person's feeling, what went on, and what may have transpired. Really, the bottom line is how it ended up. I don't want to sound like I'm being negative, because I'm not. Quite often during my conference calls or in weekly emails, we talk about systems, ideas, theories, methods, but we never speak about the things we deal with on a regular basis that can take the steam directly out of your sales. I'm going to give you a for instance. I have a black belt child who's about 11 years old who started training with me at the age of 4. He was one of my favorite students, and I have to stress to you, one of my favorite students. He was one of my favorite students. Him and I used to joke, you know, I'd be funny, or at least I thought I was, and he would laugh, and we had kind of, I thought, a special relationship until one night I noticed he was staring at the clock. Now, the interesting thing is this, and I'll pre-frame you on this. The class prior to his, I had a few clock watchers in the school, and I did a big lecture in a joking way saying that they shouldn't watch the clock and that they should be engaged in the class fully while they're here. And I said to the people in the class, the next person who watched the clock, I was going to make them hang it around their necks like one of those big rap stars that, you know, wear, you know, that clock around their neck. I forget, Flavor Flav, maybe his name was. Well, anyway, that class ended. No one else looked at the clock, and I started my next class. This young man that I just talked about, this 11-year-old black belt, came into the class and continued to watch the clock. And I told him and the rest of the class the story that had gone on before, and I said, if anyone watches the clock, then I'm going to make them wear the clock. Well, I thought he was really being a wise guy in a fun way, so he kept on watching the clock and making it obvious that he was looking at it. So I got this little clock and hung it around his neck. He laughed. We all laughed. And in my opinion, it was all in good fun. I thought it was just another way for me to connect with him and all the kids, being that we were friends, but I was an instructor. Well, I couldn't have been any further from the truth. The parents called and set up an appointment and basically told me that I ruined this child's life. I realize now that maybe I should not have done that, but then again, I'm only human, and in my eyes, it was just being silly. And from the parents' point of view, though, the kid was devastated. I learned from that situation. The long story short is this relationship had never returned to become the same relationship. And as I said before, he used to be my favorite student, and he's no longer. The other day I taught a tremendous class, and if I say so myself, the teen black belts left dripping sweat. They walked out into the lobby in my sitting area and met with their parents, and we primarily trained in sparring and grappling. And when I got out, I had a smile on my face. I said, wow, this is awesome. And I saw that same parent sitting in the lobby, the one of the child that I had put the clock around his neck. And he looked at me and just said he didn't do anything he needed for his next level, meaning that he didn't get his Q level or his techniques for his belt. And I couldn't believe my ears. You know, I had like I was on a high, and it was like a balloon that had just been popped with a pin, and all my energy was drained out of me. In fact, it bothered me so much that I'm talking about it weeks later. I thought I taught a phenomenal class, and yet this man was still unhappy. I wonder if I jumped through hoops of fire, would he have been happy? And in fact, years and years and years ago, I actually, during demos with my old teacher, would actually dive roll through a hoop of fire. But to anybody, you know, you could do that 3 or 4 times, and I'm sure that it would get boring. So, you know, I'm not sure you can please everyone, but at times, you know, you're not going to please certain individuals. These are a few quotes that I love to use in my schools while teaching and also while I do consulting. And then I'm going to go into a little detail on the quote, but I'm sure that you may have heard of some of them before. But the first one that I got, which I love, is called "Familiarity Breeds Contempt." I know this is easy to understand, but allow me to explain for those that, you know, maybe want a little bit more clarification. For those that get comfortable in your school and that they think that it's their place, that they have the right to be there, and they get used to and start looking at things from a different point of view, they start to lose respect or lose motivation. For example, I have a situation in my schools right now where I've been away for the last month. I haven't taught for one solid month. This is the first time in my life in 18 years that I've ever not done this. For whatever the reason, and there are a few, I've been trying to slowly pull myself out of the picture. I'm trying to work on my business, not into it, in it. And I'll go over that in a minute. I still want to teach, but I'm not interested in teaching every single class, every single day, and dealing with day-to-day activities. Anyway, long story short, one of the parents made a comment just yesterday that I don't teach anymore. And that's amazing to me. 1 month could transfer into any more. You know, I'm never going to teach again. I haven't taught ever. It's just shocking to me at people's perception. What 1 month could do to a person's perception. Imagine if I was sick or I had to deal with some personal issues, which in actuality, that's one of the reasons why I'm not here, because my dad is actually in the hospital right now. And I haven't been making it here at night, but I have a huge staff, well-trained, great instructors. In my opinion, it really shouldn't matter. But I'm a little flattered in a way, too, that my students want me there or the parents want me there. But I don't want them to think of my school as, you know, being a lesser quality because I'm not on the floor every day. Due to this situation, I came up with a page that I just wrote and handed out to my staff this morning called Being on the Same Page. It's an article that I handed out to them, and I'm going to read it to you to give you some ideas on how I'm handling this particular situation. Here goes. Of course, the title is On the Same Page. And I wrote, this will hopefully assist you in answering questions asked by my clients, parents, and students. Normally, a question, whether it's simple or more complex, will end up on a good note if answered properly, even if the client is not happy or concerned about a particular situation. Remember to always reframe a bad situation. For example, if a client says, hey, he or she Ali doesn't teach anymore, you must think about it and reframe it. Here are some examples that I wrote, and I hope that they'll help you and you can in turn use them in your schools. A question that may come up often due to the transition in my school with me not teaching as much anymore, a student or a client or an instructor or program manager or you know, assistant instructor may tell that parent that this may be true over the last few weeks, but it certainly is not true at all. I teach much more, meaning me, than most instructors teach when they run their schools full time. For example, a school may only be open 12 or 13 hours a week. I do 6 or 7 hours in a day. For two reasons. One, they're only open a few hours a week, and secondly, they have never put themselves in that position. For some smart, really smart school owners, they limited their interaction. Keeping themselves on that high point where people look at them as the stars, the master instructors, and to my demise, I've always given myself freely to all my students, teaching so many classes, they got so used to it, and it also became or got to the point where I was just the normal fixture in the school. I mean, people would call me a nickname. They would cut my title in half. Instead of calling me Wrenchy at the time, they'd call me Wrench. And instead of, you know, being respectful, they'd pat me on the back. And, you know, some people just get used to you. Remember that saying, familiarity breeds contempt. Also, I want my staff to tell my people, my clients, that all of us head instructors are only human. We have families. We have parents. We have to take time to recharge. During the day, we work really hard to keep the doors open. You know, the front door stuff, which people don't see, paying bills, setting up advertising, keeping the school open, teaching the staff. We have to be clear in instructing our clientele that this goes on, that we're not just martial art teachers, that all we do is just teach a class and go home. The goal is for the student to be the best they can be. Our job as instructors is the only way to breed great instructors is by developing them on the training floor and having them experience their own teaching experience. If we don't allow this to happen, then we'll never, ever have that bench strength of instructors to teach. Now, for some of us, it's very, very difficult to let go. For me, it is as well. I sometimes go home, force myself to go home and work out of my house because I know that if I'm here, I'm going to throw in my uniform and get out there. I'm going to go in the back and talk to parents. I'm going to go motivate students. But if they see me doing that all the time, anytime any of my junior instructors do it, it's going to be a lesser quality, not even a quality, but a lesser expectation. Remember, a college professor doesn't teach elementary school students. Plus, having a blend of instructors in a school is something that's unsurpassed. The ultimate goal is to learn from a bunch of different qualified instructors. So parents may say, I want one role model to mentor my child. And this has just happened recently in one of my other locations, in my Port Jeff location. I think that when a parent talks like this, they're, and I hate to use the word ignorant, they just don't know any better. It's a very limited scope of thinking. The thought is like saying that they're putting all their eggs in one basket, and if their basket breaks, then they're out of luck. And sometimes as instructors, we have one main guy we depend on. Of course, this is a good thing, but at the same time, it could be very dangerous because if that basket breaks, we're at a loss. In our school, we want our students to identify with many personalities. It's true that there will be favorites, but relationships are developed over time with a bunch of people. There are no guarantees in life, so if a student becomes too attached to a particular instructor, then when and if that instructor leaves or takes a break, the initial devastation to that student, the student is hurt or they're thrown off or they end up getting discouraged. They stop training. In the worst case scenario, they quit because that connection is lost. It's our goal not to let this happen, so we want to develop a select few relationships that can nurture our students along the way with different instructors. Sometimes a parent or student may look at this as if it were them against the school, like they're not getting what they want, so the school is a bad place, when in fact, as an owner, we put fail-safes in place to help the students and assist them in making these relationships last. It's our ultimate goal to keep students for many, many years. In the public school system, it really isn't the job of this instructor or the student to care whether the kid's going to continue on to college. Each student teaches the grade that they're in for those 9 months or 7 months or whatever it is in the different areas, and then they're done. And that kid moves on to another teacher, to another level of maturity. In our job as instructors, we have to nurture people for year after year after year. Heck, in my school, I have some kids that have been training me for as much as 17 years. Imagine how many hats I had to wear during this time period. Here's another great quote for you. While my yoga teacher, his name is Swami Buaji, B-U-A-J-I. If you want to search him on Google, you can. He's 121 years old, alive and still teaching yoga in amazing shape. Right now he's in India. He'll be back in the next few weeks. Anyway, he once told me, while you're worried about how people feel, losing sleep and worrying with knots in your stomach, those people that you're worried about that are in your mind are out there tap dancing. The thought behind this is simple. Do not let people rent space in your head. And interesting, that quote, do not let people rent space in your head, was taught to me by one of my friends who was a landscape guy. He actually had a tree business. And I used to get frustrated. Why did this customer do this? And why did this customer do that? And he told me, hey, Allie, don't let people rent space in your head. Just get rid of it. So while it's very important to always hear what people have to say, listen and make improvements on your business, especially if many people are saying the same thing, you have to never let it affect your health. If a change is necessary, make it. But if there is a direction that you want to go and your heart is in it and it's set on one direction, I suggest you follow your heart and do what you want. You run your business. The clients don't. It's your business. So here it leads into another quote. Don't let the inmates run the prison. This is also very important. If you're hearing a person in the area, in the sitting area, lobby area, or sitting, place, and they're riling people up by saying negative things, you should immediately address the situation. The one person should be taken care of, and I don't mean this to sound like I'm putting a hit out on that person like some mafia hitman, but it's imperative that you nip it in the bud. You must take the time to deal with the situation and either fix the issue, or eliminate the threat. This is what counterintelligence in the military does all the time. Without counterintelligence, there'd be a heck of a lot more terrorist attacks on U.S. soil. Our counterintelligence is the best in the world. We have to be like them with our martial arts schools. We want to find and look and see and recognize the red flags, the warning signs. And this doesn't just go for problem people who are upset in the lobby. It goes for people with attendance. They're losing motivation. The answers that they give you, the way they look, the way they act in class, the counter intel is one from the program manager, and that program manager should relay that to the instructor and vice versa. It's a communication network between the instructors and the program managers and the parents. So one warning is to watch that those issues don't breed within your school. It's like a, disease. I'll give you an example. I have a new program manager in one of my schools who's not sure how to handle the situation. This happened just recently. A parent came in and complained, and this individual wanted to lend the clients their ear. Simply listening is a part of the solution, but the person who's listening can't appear to agree. They should let the client be heard, and if the situation needs, fix the problem. Most of the time, an issue can be reframed, but for example, what I spoke about in my school about having multiple instructors was the issue. What is it that people see? What is it that we can do to help them understand the reason behind what we do? What can we do to make the situation better? One thing that I found is if you have a situation and you agree to fix the problem, or at least look into it, most people will be happy. But there's one end-all to any problem, and you must agree, and this is what I've learned over my 18 years of running a school, not only that, but prior to running any kind of business, is you must agree on a date of follow-up to make sure that the issue is put to rest. Whether it be in a day or two or a week or a month, you must revisit it to make sure that the situation is repaired. Like in the instance with my 11-year-old black belt student, the relationship has never been the same. Even though we did revisit it, I don't think that we really ever settled the issue. And I don't think no matter what hoop of fire I dive through, I'm not sure if that situation is going to be fixed. And I really wish it could be, because I feel uncomfortable. We know in our hearts when we see a client that walks through the door who's unhappy or we're not happy with our relationship with them, it puts a knot in our stomach. I've developed some of the best relationships with students and parents simply by saying, I never know what you're thinking. What's the deal? Tell me what your thoughts are. Being honest and open and hearing what they have. Anyway, these are some situations we deal with on a regular basis, and I know as a school owner that this can immediately take the wind out of your sails. It can take, you know, energy going from 100 and drop it down to a zero. So I hope some of this insight gives you a little bit to think about. My next topic that I wanted to talk about, which is similar in the similar frame of mind with stress, is building a staff and keeping them. I've gone back and forth on this one, and I once thought I was the master at this, and most recently I thought to myself to be a failure. You may ask why. Well, for years I had the same staff, the same 10 top players who helped me run my school. They seemed to be on the same page as I, and we were a well-oiled machine. Within the last 2 years, I lost 5 of those people. I found after years, some as long as 13 years that have worked for me, that they lived up to that quote, familiarity breeds contempt. They got really comfortable. It seemed that no matter what I did, how much I paid them, what contest I put in place to motivate them, they really were all not that motivated. They got their paycheck every single week, no matter whether we performed or didn't perform. I even at one time paid a consultant to come in. I paid him $17,000 to bring an outside consultant to motivate my staff. He did personal interviews with each of them to find out what made them tick, and the end result, it all pointed back to me. The people didn't feel that they were appreciated, he told me. I bought into the consultant's point of view, and we did a big brainstorming session and then a kickoff party. But my epiphany came when I saw one of my key players, one who was making a great deal of money, $65,000 a year or more, with a simple IRA, a company car. He had an unlimited ceiling on commissions. He told me that he had to leave that meeting, this kickoff session, because his daughter needed a nap. He left and never came back, believe it or not. And to me, I knew that the writing was on the wall at that point, that he lost the desire to be a part of the organization, that he felt that his paycheck was the only reason that it was holding him. I should have seen the warning signs, and being the person that I am, not to say that it's a smart one, I dealt with it. I then realized at that point that it wasn't so much the organization, but because it was the 10 years prior, everyone was happy, we were doing all the right things, and motivation was high. But just like anything, when it becomes a routine, it gets old real quick. No matter how motivating this consultant was, his ideas fell on deaf ears. I have another quote, and I've been using this a lot lately. You can't teach a horse to fly. I must have said this 25 times to one of my staff members this past week and a half. You can work all you want and do all you think you can do to help this horse to fly, but heck, you can even hire a consultant for 17 grand, but the horse is still never going to fly. What I've learned in the past 3 years is that you need to hire qualified people. You can't run an orphanage for out-of-work people. I tend to look for employees and say, who needs work? So-and-so's out of a job. Do you think they'll work for me? This mom is here all the time in the lobby. Do you think she'll work for me? Even if they did come on board, they're probably not going to be suited for the job. So the goal is to find qualified people. What does that mean? Not only do they need to have the hard skills to do the job, the experience and the ability, they need to have the personality. You may think that this person has a personality and they have charisma, but what I really mean by personality is they have to have the character traits that fit the job description. For example, an instructor has to be assertive, charismatic, organized, and a good public speaker, a good presenter. He has to be a motivator, too. You can take a person and train them to be that way, but if you try to do that to a person who is just not outgoing, he may be introverted or she may be introverted, you are basically setting yourself up for failure. the person has to have the innate qualities. If they don't, the job will be short-lived because you'll be continually putting them in an uncomfortable situation. They'll continually see their job as uncomfortable, and eventually issues will arise to the it'll all rise to the top, and they'll quit without a minute's notice. So you need to find the right person who feels comfortable in that position. I recommend taking the time to do a personality profile on all positions within your company. What is a program manager's duty? What is their personality? Do they work alone? Do they work with people? Do they have to be self-starters? We spent recently a great deal of money on this personality profile for all the positions within our school and developed not only a job description but interview questions and a phone interview before there was a face-to-face meeting set up. Our goal was to find the right people because the right person is the difference between high performance and mediocrity. We need to search long and hard for gems rather than taking the time to polish the stones over and over again. Now, don't get me wrong. Teaching students is different. We want to polish, polish, polish until they eventually become gems. But when we hire people that are going to put money into our company or help us grow our schools, they have to be the right people right away, or soon after they're hired, they can go through training. People have asked me before, what do you pay a program manager? This is a hard thing to answer, but one guideline is this. What can you afford? What will be the hours that they'll be there at your school? Can you supplement their job with a commission structure based on performance? I personally like commissions based on performance because at that point, I pay for the successes, not for the failure. I've paid many employees high salaries, and when they underperform, they look at you without even as much as a sorry in their eyes. The bottom line is they get paid, and you don't. So as a business owner, performance is why you pay a person. Remember, and I don't want this to sound cold, an employee is like an investment. They're either a liability or an asset. People talk all the time about real estate as an investment. And if you evaluate your property, and your property goes up in value, you get a good return on your money, well, this is only true if you sell that asset or property. Your house could be worth $5 million. The goal is to look at all employees as an asset or a liability, but they have to be a vital part of your success team. And only when they're making the company money are they a asset. If they're costing money and not making you money, they're a liability. Just like that house that you pay a mortgage on every single month is not a asset. It's not something that's going to make you money unless you buy it and rent it. So you want to eliminate or repair all liabilities within your company. Here's another thing I really feel very passionate about is how to work on your business, not in it. And this is important. This is a reoccurring theme in Michael Gerber's book, The E-Myth. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. It's called The E-Myth, just E-MYTH, by Michael Gerber. The theory of being self-employed was also clarified to me in another book written by another great author called Rob Kiyosaki. The book was called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and his follow-up book was called Cash Flow Quadrants. So here are three books I recommend if you haven't read them, The E-Myth, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and Cash Flow Quadrants. Cash Flow Quadrants and Rich Dad, Poor Dad were written by Rob Kiyosaki, The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. If you took a piece of paper and drew a line vertically and horizontally, sort of like the plus sign, you'd have four quadrants. The upper left, you can write in it, employed. This is a job you have working for another person, much like the employees in your school, program managers, and so on. Technically, they do what you say when you say it all the time. Of course, if you do it correctly, they're assets in your company. They'll do things on their own and give you good ideas and run your company for you, making you a profit. But that's another seminar altogether. The next category is directly under this one on the left side, and that's called self-employed, which is directly below the employed section. This is nothing more than you creating a job for yourself. When you become self-employed, you basically just take the boss out of the equation. You become the boss, but you work hard many hours per week, most of the time longer than the employees. You do it all. When things don't get done, you're there. You are there when things go wrong. You're there when the alarm system goes off at night. You're there when no one else shows up. Basically, you made a job for yourself, and normally you work more hours than most employees ever would. So the right side top, which is the most important, is business owner. Now, you should be writing this down. Left side, employed. Bottom left, self-employed. Top right, business owner. This is where you work on your business, not in it. Your main function is to make sure you teach, train, and follow up on the key employees, You develop the KRA, the key result areas that they're supposed to be working on. And the people that are running the show, you're working with them closely. You're the boss, the owner, the king, so to speak. Underneath, and this is where you develop. You're the idea man. You keep on pushing that company forward. Now, granted, sometimes you may want to be in this position, but your company is just not lucrative enough to do that. Hopefully, you'll eventually develop into a business owner, not self-employed, but a business owner where you're running the show. Underneath on the bottom right is the investment section. This is geared towards developing the passive income stream. Things that will make you money in your sleep with little or no effort from you on a day-to-day basis. This could be a rental property, a coin-operated laundromat. It could be another business operation or entity like maybe a store, an eBay store, or a web-based product, or whatever you can do to tap into the clientele that you have or other people in other areas of business. The goal is to reach a specific level of passive income per month where you make enough money to live your lifestyle and enjoy without having to go to work on a daily basis. This is the ultimate businessman, snapping back and forth from the businessman to investor, businessman to investor. Hopefully you won't have to bump from right to left or left to right from self-employed to business owner. Although at times you may have to do this. You know, an employee may quit unnoticed, boom, all of a sudden you're back in that position. You may say you don't want to retire, but you certainly don't have to deal with the stress like you would in a day-to-day operation with the type of quadrant mentality. So what is it that you're going to do to reach this level of business success? I recently spoke with someone on email who is a really highly successful school owner. I won't mention his name, but he's a Member Solutions client. And I asked him the question. I said, listen, how much do you teach in your school? I waited for his response, and he emailed me back something to this effect. I don't have it written down. I'm just going off the top of my head. He said, Ali, you may not like the answer to this, but I don't teach any longer in my schools, and he has 6 locations. Maybe 10 years ago, I might have thought that was terrible. But to be honest with you, I envy that kind of mentality. He then went on to tell me that he trains when he wants. He's still very active in the martial arts, doing martial arts, so he stays in shape. He's still a technician, but he runs his schools. He's in the business owner quadrant. He trains his staff. He trains his key instructors, and that's what his main focus is. Because, you know, obviously, we can't be everywhere. You know, for example, I've been gone just for a month, and I'm getting complaints from my staff, or not staff, my students, that I'm no longer here. I don't teach anymore. I pretty much abandoned the organization. Well, lo and behold, the most important thing is that we have to eventually be able to live our lives a little bit differently. We can't be a slave to our business. We can't have to be there every single day or 3 days a week. We need to work on the bigger picture items. We have to become, you know, those, you know, inventors of the different systems and ideas. You know, I'm sure there are owners out there that run franchise businesses, like for instance, the guy who founded Starbucks. He's not out making coffee still. Or even Tiger Shulman, who's a great businessman. He doesn't teach at all of his locations. So it's important for us to realize that we want to run our businesses, not work in them all the time. Work on them, not work in them. I know I've gone on and on for a long time. It's 40 minutes nonstop without asking a question. So, Kathy, if you're listening, we can just maybe open up the lines for a question. And if anything is on the question or what I'm talking about or any other questions, and then I'll get back into my summation of everything. So are we ready?
Okay. The phone lines are open. So if anybody's on the phone that has a question, go for it.
Does anyone have a question out there?
Kiyoshi Ali, it's Dwight Woods in Miami.
How are you, Sifu?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm very well. And, you know, first of all, I want to say that you're amazing because you're pretty much on almost every teleseminar phone call, and I'm sure not just mine but everyone. So you're an example for everyone else because even though you run a really successful JKD school, you're always improving and growing. So hear, hear.
I think it's the theory of the slight edge.
Right. Absolutely. So did you have a question at all or a comment?
Yeah, clarify for me, give me some examples of the differences in working in your business versus working on your business.
Okay. Well, let me give you first the struggle that I'm having with it, because as you know, I'm pretty honest about everything that I do, and I'm not just like trying to paint a picture that I'm this genius businessman so everyone buys my product or listens to me talk. I'm actually going through a struggle right now with that whole theory of working on my business, not in my business. And let me tell you why, because I've gone through phases with this where I used to just kind of teach all the time, 50 hours a week. I was at every class. I did every exercise with every class and so on and so forth. Then I had built some really great instructors up, gave me a little bit of free time. My daughter was born. I wanted to spend more time with my family. So I pulled my belt back slightly. Maybe I was teaching 30 hours a week, not 50 or 60. Anyway, at that point, there was a little bit of a transition where people said, I don't teach anymore. Now, granted, a lot of those people that complained trained with me when I first opened my school, and I only taught 16 hours a week. Now I'm teaching 60 classes a week or 68 classes a week, and they're complaining because they're only getting 30 of those taught by me. Anyway, long story short is I had to go from being in everyone's face every single day to try to pull myself back. Now I'm trying to really do that even more where people don't rely on me being the main instructor, you know, having to be there every day. So what I have to do is develop systems so that I could keep everything going the way it was, the quality, the performance, making sure everyone's being taken care of. And this has to do with having a really good program manager, having really good training sessions for your staff so that they know what to look for, recognize, and how to deal with it. So my whole goal ultimately is to run my school and be the idea man behind everything. And I want to come back in and teach on a regular basis, but I don't want to be expected to teach. I want, when I walk on the floor, people to actually appreciate it. For example, one of my girls, Danielle, who is one of our program managers, she's amazing. She actually was talking to a parent the other day, and the teacher, the same person I'm talking about, said, well, Kiyoshi doesn't teach as much anymore. And she said, well, you know, that's kind of the way it should be, because he's like the head instructor. He's the master of the school. He's the one who developed all this, you know, and this is how it's done in Japan. And that person said, well, this is not Japan. So that's why I came up with this list of things about how people should respond to comments like that. But the goal is to work on the systems and work on the training of your staff so that you could be outside looking in. And you know, being in the day-to-day, it's hard to do any of those things when you're there answering the phone, teaching the classes, dealing with hassles, and so on. Your ideas kind of get limited that way.
Yeah.
Did that answer the question?
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the reasons why I'm able to be on the teleseminars is because I schedule my day around the things that I want and need to do. But everybody at my school knows that when I'm there, you know, like they know that I teach Tuesday night and Thursday night.
Right.
You know, but Mondays and Wednesdays, nobody expects me to be on the floor teaching or what have you. And my answer when people say, oh, well, you don't teach as much as you used to in the old days is well, I'm older now.
Yeah.
I need to rest more.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, which I find to be really shocking, because I couldn't imagine me going up to my teacher in Japan. And let me kind of preframe the story. I would pay $5,000 to $6,000 in flights and preparation and dues to go to Japan, and I'd have like 10 days that I'd be able to train with my teacher, and he'd give me a schedule, and some days on that schedule it would say morning training, self-training. You know what that meant? That if I wanted to train, I'd come there and I would be by myself.
Mm-hmm.
I would pay thousands upon thousands of dollars just to spend maybe 20 hours with this individual. Yet in our school, people are so used to us, they become complacent. You know, that we are like a fixture. We give ourselves to those people. That's why, you know, I think, like, you know, meeting a celebrity or anybody who's very important, whether it be a priest, the Dalai Lama, if you met them for the first time or only a few times, it'd be special every time. But if you sat down with them in, you know, your shorts around the pool every day, the level of excitement would slowly go down. And I think that a lot of us school owners, we don't take enough time building ourselves up, or the staff doesn't take enough time building up, and not to, you know, kind of stroke our egos, but to just explain to people that, you know, be thankful to have a guy in the room that could change your life, that has put 40 years into their training,
yeah,
and really, really experience that situation with that special individual. Because I have to be honest, there's not a lot of them out there. There's not a lot of special individuals out there. There are millions of people on the planet. Everyone has their own uniqueness. But there are certain people that are just, you know, they're just changing lives.
You're absolutely right. I wonder, how much feedback did you get on the Toot in Your Own Horn article? Because that was excellent.
Well, I got a letter from you and a few others saying that it was a good article, and I appreciate that. And for the people who are listening, basically that article was just about not being afraid to educate clients. I'm going to give you an example again that, you know, we teach Oriental martial arts. They're from a different culture. There's a different mentality behind that. Like, for example, I have a client that's Indian in my school. It's a son. The dad's a doctor. The mom's just a stay-at-home mom, and they're a very traditional Indian family. Very often, at least twice a month, they'll bring me either a dessert that I love because the mom's a vegetarian, I'm a vegetarian, or they'll bring me a cake mix that's all vegan, or they'll bring me food that's been cooked by their grandparents, and they present it as a gift every single time. That's their tradition, to revere and respect and repay. Even though they're paying tuition every month, they repay their instructor for this knowledge because knowledge is sacred. So that Toot Your Own Horn article was all about not being afraid to educate people. And I hate to use the word ignorant, but people are ignorant and not negative. Like usually when we say you're ignorant, it sounds bad, but really they just don't know any better. And if they don't know any better, how do we get them to know other than educating? And we have to toot our own horn. Say, hey, you know what? Sifu Dwight has been practicing for how many years? How many years have you been doing martial arts?
Nobody remembers because it's so long, but it's over 35.
Yeah, so, you know, 35 years dedicating to one thing. Heck, half the marriages in the country don't last that long.
Right,
you know,
25 of those years have been spent, you know, as Dan Inosanto's student.
And, you know, anybody who knows Dan Inosanto knows that, you know, he's one of the most worldly. This gentleman taught Bruce Lee and was Bruce Lee's best friend. You know, I mean, Guru Inosanto is just amazing. Anyway, but, you know, that's something that people need to know. Like, when they're coming to you to complain that little Johnny didn't get his stripe or they're a little unhappy because of whatever, they have to know that they're dealing with somebody who's like the ultimate master of what he's done, who's dedicated his entire life. So if you don't toot your own horn, who's going to do it? And if you don't do it for yourself, your staff should be doing it for you. Every day you should be built up in such a way that people think you can walk on water. Not to say that we want to be looked godly or anything like that, but people have to know that. And the only way to respect people these days is to really understand their accomplishments. You know, the old saying that in order to get respect, you have to give respect, that's not true any longer. I don't think as much. I can't say it's not true. It's not as prevalent in our society. You have to earn someone's respect. So we need for our students to be able to build us up in that way where people understand that it's a privilege when the headmaster walks on the floor, that the kids should be getting pictures with their teacher and autographs. It shouldn't just be like, oh, well, there he goes again. That's, you know, Kiyoshi Ali. You know, who cares if he's a world-renowned speaker and author? When he teaches my kid, he's just my hired karate instructor. We have to make sure that we explain to people what's going on. Make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I'm gonna hold off for a second and, you know, see who else wants to ask a question or talk to you. And then I got something else I want to bring up to you.
Very good. Anybody else have a question? Or, Kathy, do we have any online questions?
We do. We've got three really juicy questions waiting for you.
Okay.
Yeah, three juicy ones. So the first one is from Michelle and Eddie in Bel Air, and they said, hey, great seminar. They want to know, how do you decide when and what you pay staff? Should you put a strain on your income to pay staff?
Okay. There are two philosophies. You know, in order to get ahead, sometimes you have to take chances. And if anyone can tell you that from life experience, that's me. In fact, I'm divorced because of it, probably. And not in a bad way. But my ex-wife used to say to me, how could you do that? Like, I would leverage my personal home to buy another piece of real estate and then pay the home off and have another asset. And I was always, for the last 15 years, constantly putting myself in dangerous situations, not in a bad way where I was haphazard because I knew what I was doing, but for the normal, average, everyday person, they would have never taken those chances. So there's one philosophy that says you can stress your business a little to hire staff, but then the other part of me would say, as a consultant, be very careful that you do it in the right way. That you don't put yourself in a situation where by making that choice you could put yourself out of business or lose a great deal of money. there are many other ways to do that, and just I want to offer to you guys, you could always email me and I'll guide you through the steps, but there are different ways to set people up with structured commission structures that you could offer them a lot less money up front, with the return being a lot more in the end, because they, if they produce, they'll make more money than they ever could have as a paid salaried employee. I'll give you an example. One of my staff members, I had given them a choice a while back. I said, you could either make a set salary for X amount of hours a week, or I could give you X amount of hours a week as a base, and I can guarantee you that I'll pump you full of private lessons and birthday parties. And they said to me, nah, I'd rather have a set salary. And I said, you do realize on your set hours, I'm going to pump you full of private lessons and birthday parties anyway. So you have a choice of making more money, but they chose the safe way, which a lot of people do. Nowadays, she's going, well, how come I'm not making that much money, or how come I'm not getting paid for a party? And then they forget that they had this opportunity, but because of the fear, they didn't take it. The answer to close that question is this. You have to do what's right for your business. Don't really put yourself in a dangerous situation. But in order to expand, sometimes you have to hire staff. You can't do it all yourself. You have to put yourself out there and hire the right people. And if you do, they should immediately bring value and build your business. And I'd be more than happy you could email me. My email is Renshi, L-I-Ninja, that's R-E-N-S-H-I, L-I-Ninja, N-I-N-J-A at AOL.com. Or contact Taking It to the Next Level on the web, or Member Solutions will give you my email. So I hope that answered the question. Any others, Kathy?
Oh, yes. Sunil in Illinois, he wants to know, he did a 90-day review for his membership coordinator. He wanted to tell her that the next review will be when we hit 50 students. He's got a small school. He wants to know, do you think this is good or bad, because he pays her an hourly salary currently.
I think that's a bad idea, and I hope that you don't get insulted by that, and I'll tell you why. I think that in this specific case, the more guidance and the more reviews that you do, like, for instance, you may sit down in at the 50-student mark, and that might be in 7 years from now. What you want to do is guide them every step of the way so that they start producing students, you know, every second of the day. Now, at that point, they're going to need that guidance. And I'll tell you, I know this from personal experience as well, where I have multiple locations where I train a program manager for about a month, send them off to a location, which is only like 10 minutes away in a whole other town, and it could have been like I sent them to Iraq to sit in a foxhole. They felt like they were isolated. They were away from the training. They didn't have constant mentorship. They need to be guided. An employee needs the tools in order to be a successful employee. It's our job as main instructors, owners of the business, to continually nurture and watch. We say follow up, you know, inspect what you expect, right? You need to constantly give them positive feedback as well as recorrect along the way on a daily basis. For example, when a pilot flies an airplane from New York to Japan, and if they put the plane on autopilot, the plane will slightly shift 1 degree because of the wind or whatever. They might end up in Australia somewhere. They have to constantly watch their meters and recorrect, watch their meters and recorrect, even though that the plane is on autopilot. So our autopilot should be to give them the tools to make sure they're doing their job and constantly mentor and monitor. I always tell my staff, not all of them take advantage of it, but never feel like it's a bother to ask me a question, ask me how to do it, fix the problem. I once had one of my main staff members, I went over a list of 1 through 10 about what I wanted them to do. I asked them to read it back to me and write it down, which they did. 2 weeks later, I asked them why they weren't doing 8 out of the 10 points, and they said to me, what do you mean? What am I supposed to do? I don't quite understand it. So 2 weeks went by wasted because I assumed that they were going to do their job and they understood what I thought they should have understood. Anyway, always constant correction, motivation, guidance, and inspect what you expect. Never give it a month or two. Always be there along the way. And remember, the more successes you help them achieve, eventually they'll become success machines. And at that point, you can cut them loose and just watch them go.
Nothing I needed. I just wanted to.
Anything else, Gabby?
Yes. Mark Gadowstick from Hillsboro. This is a couple sentences long, so let me read this to you if you don't mind.
Okay.
Mr. Alberigo, as my school grows, I'm going through some pains as I use my leadership and instructor team more and more to do the menial class tasks like warm-up, stretching, beginner class instruction, etc. I've already had some parents and students that have gotten spoiled by my attention from when we were smaller. They're complaining that I'm not giving them the time when I'm actually giving them so much more in quality and organization. What are some of your strategies when you talk to the parents about this stuff? That's his whole question.
Well, I think that's an awesome question. It's kind of a little bit like what we talked about throughout this entire conversation and this teleseminar, but I think that you're doing the right thing. You know, what we have to do is understand that, you know what, if we open up and we have 10 students and we do things, and I'm going to try to use an example and just simply say we follow steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, and that's the way we do it for months and months at a time, and then all of a sudden we say, hey, let's do a kind of like a variation of that to improve, and we change it to 1A, B, 2A, 2C. We just slightly change it. The change is going to be a problem for people. People do not accept change all that well. This is my thing, though. I think that we do not preframe and reframe change. People think of change as a negative, and they get uncomfortable because they've established it being a certain way. I like it when you teach all the time, when you were there, you were my mentor, blah, blah, blah. What we need to do is just start instituting new methods, then eventually they become the norm. And through that time period, there's going to be a struggle. You may lose some people. You may frustrate some people. So the easiest way to not allow that to happen is by definitely building up, explaining, and showing people the reasons why you're doing this, and it's for their benefit. It's not for you because you're lazy and you don't want to do it anymore. It's because you want to help more people and you want to guide them in a different way, possibly in a better direction. But you have to let the people know how and why you're doing it. And I'm sure the majority, 99.9% of the people, will understand and appreciate it because you're explaining it to them and they'll get to see it that way. I hope that helped. Any other questions, Kathy?
Not on the web, Allie. Maybe somebody else on the phone line has a final question for you.
We only have a few minutes. It goes so fast. But anybody have a question? Okay, how about you, Sifu? You had one more question.
Yeah, tomorrow I'm going to be on the phone with a publicity expert, the guy who literally sold the Brooklyn Bridge.
Oh, okay.
And, when you were talking about, you know, because it seems that in today's day and age, people respect celebrity more than they respect specialty or know-how or what have you. So I just had this thought when you were talking about, you know, that we have to educate both the students and maybe even the parents of our younger students about who we are and what we are. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on how school owners and instructors could go about becoming celebrities in their communities.
Well, you know what? There's no doubt that that's very, very important. And you know, the word celebrity, when we say that word, of course, we think of people like, you know, Paris Hilton and you know, all the negative celebrities. But there are people out there that are just unbelievable, you know, celebrities that do great things. Not only are they great actors, but they're great, you know, altruistic, you know, people. They're out there raising money for charity. Anyway, long story short is I think that people respect achievement. Nothing more than martial artists. The martial artists do nothing more than achieve. And I think that we need to put it out there in a way where people could see it in the way that they would receive it the best. For example, it could be a press release in the paper. It could be a little clip on News 12 or whatever is the, you know, the news channel. It could be sent out in your newsletter. I'll give you an example. One of my black belt candidates, I'm having a big test this weekend with 26 people testing for their black belt. And I have one of the dads who's the producer for, I believe it's E! Entertainment or one of those shows. So I asked him, I hadn't really ever mentioned it to him. I said, if you ever need somebody, call me. I'd love to come on the show. And he says, well, that's interesting because we're always searching for something like if there's a big rape or a bad killing or something that in the area, they're always looking for an expert that could talk about self-protection or awareness. He goes, now that I know you're interested and willing to do it, I'll call you every time and put you on TV. And it's a matter of me finding those connections and nurturing them. So we have to bring that celebrityhood through press releases, through articles, through our newsletter, through our students and staff talking about us, through some of our assistant helpers and so on, and toot our own horn, build us up in front of those students so that they don't think that it's just common information, that they take it to heart. I mean, if a sports figure, like a famous baseball player, told a little kid not to do drugs, they may listen to them a little bit more than they would to their parent, because their parent has an agenda. That baseball player may be, is just famous and talented and whatever, and the kid looks up to them and idolizes them and will listen a little bit more. Anyway, I think that we have to do a little bit more in the self-promotion area. And I think that's why martial arts is not as big as other things, because we're so humble. We don't want to tell people how great we are. That's why people don't get the message that the martial arts is life-changing, because we're so secretive and quiet and humble about it. We need to get out there as an industry and toot our own horn. We need Oprah Winfrey or, you know, Montel Williams talking about the benefits of martial arts like they do about all the other stuff. We need some spokespeople out there. I'd love, if you guys want to get me out there on the Oprah show, just tell her I'm available. I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean? Like, that's what we need to do. We really need to elevate our industry. And it's not just from within. It's not just in the Maya, Natma, taking it to the next level, Mata circuits. We have to get out to the general public and let them know that we're much more than just another sport.
Right.
We're a life-changing activity. Yeah. Anyway, I think that's all the time I have for now. And I hope this is a good conference call for everybody. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And one last thing, a selfless plug. Don't forget takingittothenextlevel.com. We're giving away a free month at Member Solutions. And the last thing is, I'm really, really proud. I just released my newest book called The 21st Century Ninjutsu, and it's called The Warrior's Mindset, and it's available on my website at takingittothenextlevel.com, and I'm sure through Member Solutions at some point. But I'm honored that you guys are listening today, and thank you, Kathy, for always being online with me. And thanks for all the questions, and I'll talk to you real soon. Please email me with any more questions, and everyone have an unbelievably great day. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Allie. Thank you.
Bye.
Great job.